two things jumped out as you were describing OSINT. First of all, you mentioned public information. Secondly, you mentioned something you don't have to pay for. So listening closely, sometimes those two things might be the same. Sometimes those two things might be different. So I'll try to see if I can explain this correctly. So public information that I have to pay for, maybe if I want to know a phone number, for example, because I noticed if you go on Google and you, of course, you go on Google Maps, you type McDonald's and then it shows you the nearest McDonald's, there's a phone number for that particular McDonald's restaurant. And I can call them up and then I make my order, I pick it up, they deliver it either way. And then the second type of address phone number combination that is not publicly available that I might have to pay for is if, for example, I look up my own address and then, of course, it shows me a Google map, I'm not going to see my phone number on my address on Google map because that's personal information. To see that, maybe I have to sign up to whitepages.com or go on some fancy database and then I have to make some payments and then maybe it takes me to the DMV website. So as far as addresses, phone numbers, have you come across any situation where you found or it's possible to see someone's phone number online on a public website?
On a public website? Well, yes, for sure. I think it all depends on what kind of information is it that you start your investigation with. Sometimes you don't even have a real first name and last name. You have an alias or maybe a username from Instagram. So you would have to resolve that first to someone's actual identification. But let's assume best case scenario, you do have a first and last name. There are a lot of repositories of supposedly private information where you can find both an address and a phone number. Just keep in mind, anytime that you go to the store and they offer you a discount in exchange for your phone number, now that store that's giving you maybe a 10% discount or some kind of promotion, now they are the guardians of that phone number. Whether or not they're good guardians of that information, that that's up for discussion, up for debate. You can also find that information on data leaks whenever those companies suffer breaches, then that information will become, unfortunately, publicly available. Also, for any government paperwork that you do, you usually have to give your phone number. Like if you go to the hospital, if you go to register for a wedding certificate or anything like that, you do have to give some kind of information there. And as far as how good are those organizations or entities safeguarding your address, your phone number, then that's up for debate.
Wow. Wow. So from what you just described, basically almost everything we do, not even online, almost everything we go into an office building to do could potentially end up somewhere on the internet. If I walk into a supermarket, a grocery store, they ask me if I want to sign up for their rewards program, their loyalty points, so that anytime I shop, I scan some barcode and then it gives me points so that if I spend maybe $50 or $100 in a month, then I can come back to get some $5 worth of whatever. Of course, they're asking for emails, passwords, phone numbers. All of that could end up somewhere on the internet. And of course, we know how all these businesses handle data. An advertiser might approach them, saying, we want to be able to advertise to specific groups of people who come into your store. We want to be able to advertise to young men between the ages of 18 and 25, meaning single young men, because this product would appeal more to them compared to young women of the same age group or compared to single moms of a certain age group. So the advertiser gets those phone numbers and email addresses, maybe not their names, because they really don't need their names. Mm-hmm. All they need is, okay, a phone number, a working phone number, because if they send the ad, chances are the person is going to click on a link in that text message or email, and then the person would then tell them his or her name. So it's just, it looks like it's inevitable. Or are there ways for us to avoid handing over our personal phone numbers or email addresses to all this? Because if you want to get a marriage certificate, you have to give them your actual phone number. Or are exactly. there ways around it? You are the OSINT's expert, so any suggestions?
I said aficionado at the beginning of the episode. That's why.
Right, right.
I don't trust right. anybody that calls himself an OSINT expert.
Right, right.
But, I mean, there are ways to mitigate the damage. It all depends on how keen you are into being super private. Of course, any privacy that measure that you apply on your personal life, on your work life, will cost you some trouble in the sense of convenience. Mm. So, for example, I got years ago a Google Voice phone number. And it's all good to give to those stores to get those discounts, to get those coupons. It's all fine. But then if you want to sign up for any type of service, let's say you want to sign up for WhatsApp, you want to sign up for Telegram, or for just an actual government website for to do your taxes, they're not going to accept those kind of VoIP phone numbers, voice over IP.
Right.
Same goes for verification. Even Google does not let you use Google Voice to verify an email that you have on them.
Yep.
So you see how those convenience, like sign up with Google and then they send you that verification. Well, you have to have an actual phone number. Are there ways around it? I would say so. I've been using a service called Telo for a little bit, and I am actually very happy with it. Now, you have to understand, you probably need an additional phone, an additional device to have that service on if you really want to be very private about separating like your life and your, let's say, work or your investigations or your OSINT research and all that stuff. The reason I like that specific service, even though I tried Mint as well, but the reason I like Telo is because you don't have to give them your actual address, in the sense they don't verify your driver's license or anything like that. And also they let you pay with a gift card. So I don't want my credit card and my name associated with a phone that I'm using to investigate everything from as innocent as an arm burner to you can think of just bigger types of crimes that could escalate, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So in that sense, I like the fact that I can use a gift card. And again, you can go 007 and wear a hat and glasses and a mask and go purchase it at Best Buy. We can just get it at your local supermarket.
7-Eleven.
Uh-huh, at your local 7-Eleven.
Yep. And to your point on different services, I feel like depending on where you live, if you just run a simple Google search on how to get a phone number that is not going to be traceable back to you, and keeping in mind that as a good guy, you're doing this search, bad guys also do the same search. So which brings us to the question of, if doing this to cover your tracks because you're working on a sensitive investigation, and then the bad guys are also doing this to be able to cover their tracks because they want to be able to attack or send a phishing email or run a sophisticated scam, is it possible to be able to now do the reverse trace of basically identify someone using all these sophisticated techniques to cover their tracks? Or is it basically, if it works for the good guys, it's definitely 100% also going to work for the bad guys? How can you tell? if a bad guy is trying so hard to cover their tracks, or is that limited to certain three-letter agencies who we shall not speak of?
I like that line. I mean, of course, law enforcement agencies, they have different kind of access besides having the awesome skills, right? So assuming that I don't have any type of special access, I'm not partnering up with any law enforcement agency, then it would be for someone, for a bad guy, let's say for a threat actor, to find them if they have experience, if they're really skilled in what they do, then it could be very complicated. But again, we're all humans. We all make mistakes. And if we don't, our mom will, the boyfriend will, the best friend will.
Yeah.
So if I can't find the actual person I'm looking for, then I kind of reverse engineer it. So I start from, can I find the partner? Can I find mom? Can I find a brother? And then try to walk it back to the actual person. Of course, it can take time. These investigations are not a 20-minute thing that you just Google and find the your person of interest. But of course, the resources are out there. I do acknowledge that sometimes there are roadblocks that you can't just circumvent, and it would be up to law enforcement with a different type of access, with social media warrants, to be able to grab that information.
Right, right. And that reminded me of a case I worked on, and I have to be careful how much I say here. So it had to do with a basketball player in a major American city, and that was from 3 years ago. There was a cyber-stalking issue with that basketball player's relative, not the basketball player. His relative was being stalked, an ex-boyfriend. And somehow I got on the case and we couldn't find this person. But to your point, this person's family member made a mistake and some one thing led to the other, an IP address in Costa Rica. So that's all I can say about that. So yeah, it's possible that you just can't find anything because this person has a good OPSEC, operational security, and they happen to do their stalking from the house of one of their family members in Costa Rica. And they were stalking this person in a major American city. So two countries, yeah, so...
That's the benefits and detriment of the internet. Now you can do cybercrime from whatever you are, as long as you have access to the internet. And in that sense, there's also a human component, because no one wants to think that the person that's stalking you or doing these type of things might be someone that you know. Actually, I watched, I think it was a documentary on Netflix. I don't really recall the name, but it was someone that was being victimized in that way by a cyber stalker. And the person was really, really nervous. She was being stalked for years until she hired a private investigator. And it was actually one of her family members that was jealous of her and would do this like harassing calls and change numbers and all that stuff. So from the human point of view, no one wants to believe that a family member, that a close friend might be the person that's behind the stalking.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I've watched a few documentaries on psychological crimes, especially stalking cases. They are almost always done by someone close to the victim. Because statistically, it doesn't make sense to stalk someone you don't know. There has to be something or someone linking the perpetrator and the victim together. So, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Yeah. So, talking about searching for people, searching for clues online, we all know how social media has become a big part of our lives over the past 6, 7, 10 years. From your experience, how do you see social media making things easier for both the good guys and the bad guys trying to solve an investigation or basically trying to make someone's life difficult online?
Well, that's that's a complicated question to answer. Just because the business structure of the social media platforms is to get eyes on everybody, is to get that attention, those likes, so they can at the same time show you advertisement, right? So if they start limiting too much the access that we have to see stories and pictures and posts and all that stuff, then that could get really complicated. In my experience, the different social media networks usually lean more on the open sharing of information. We know that for many, many years, there were a lot of CSAM cases happening within Facebook groups and things like that. And it's just
child sexual abuse material.
Correct. So, and it's hard for these networks. I'm not saying they're the bad guys, but at the same time, they went into the business of advertising, and now they have to, by force, be in the business of policing people's behaviors. So I think at the end of the day, the main thing would be to give the individual agency over their own privacy. So if you don't want to be stalked, if you don't want to be a victim, just be careful of what you post, be careful of what you share. People can use any pictures that you share. Like, I get scared anytime a friend posts a picture of their kids' daycare, of their school, where you can clearly see the sign where that school is at, where you share, like, I picked him up and then my mom picked him up. So now someone that could have that kind of mentality to follow you has a little bit of information on your life, on your family's whereabouts, on your daily life. So at the end of the day, I like to empower the user and the individual to be aware of your privacy, be aware of what you share. If a good guy can find it, so can a bad guy. So that would be my take on social media.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, and even not just the pictures that people posted. So, of course, on social media, first day of school, and people are posting pictures of their child or children with their new backpacks and new outfits and the name of the school as the background of the picture, saying, of course, they are proud parents. They want to show that they are doing a good job, their child is getting to the next level, going to school and all that good stuff, which is fine, all well and good. However, it's important to keep in mind that the medium where you're sharing might be too public for this good news that you want everybody to hear about. Maybe the same child in the same outfit with the same cool backpack and nice shoes, but take the picture in front of your house before they get to school. Or take the picture in front of the school, but don't make the name of the school. So don't put the location tag. And even people with stickers on their cars says, my child goes to blah, blah, blah elementary. And you drive that car on the road, on the highway. Now the whole world knows where your child goes to school. That's something else to also keep in mind. Because like you said, if a good guy can know how to dig through, not even Instagram and Facebook and so on. Now LinkedIn. People now use LinkedIn as if it's social media. We go on LinkedIn and I'm seeing people posting pictures about their children on LinkedIn. That always baffles my mind and I'm thinking, well, they're trying to show their coworkers, but this is a public post. You're not just posting it to a group of your coworkers. You're posting it to a group, including me. I don't know you from anywhere. Now I'm seeing the pictures of your children on LinkedIn publicly.
Exactly.
So
and you never know who's behind those. Like, I've gotten so many requests for allegedly job offers. Do you want to apply? Can you send me this? And then they start asking for more private information. What's your address? What's your social security? We need to verify this. And then you immediately notice this is not an actual employer looking for a new hire. Yep. This is someone that's just trying to grab information. And if it's out there for anybody to grab, actually, I learned a very valuable lesson with LinkedIn. Because in the past, many years ago, even before I started in cyber, I used to have my resume attached to my LinkedIn profile. I don't know if you can do that now, but I used to have it like that. And I missed the fact that my phone number, my actual number, was there. I didn't have my address, but I had my phone number. So one day, this is how I found out that someone could access it. I moved from my old place to the new place. And I sent an Amazon package to my old place by mistake. The person that received it, again, good person, very honest. She tried to find my information. And guess how she found it? She downloaded my resume from LinkedIn. She found my phone number. And she called me, hey, I have your Amazon package. Wow. Now, imagine if that was someone else. And it didn't even cross my mind that I had that. Yeah. There publicly for anybody to download.
Ouch.
So, even with
Yeah, imagine someone with bad intentions just show up on your front door, knock your door saying, I live here now. And they
like, exactly.
Wow. Yeah, I've seen a few people posting their resume as a PDF attachment on LinkedIn. They upload it as a PDF attachment. Some people take a picture, like they scan their resume and upload it as a picture and then make it like a post so that maybe recruiters can easily get in touch with them. So maybe they want to skip a step if recruiters, I mean, people do things for different reasons, but it's important to also pay attention to the underlying consequences. Because, and that's understandably difficult for people who don't have the cybersecurity background we have to, because they see LinkedIn as a job board, basically somewhere you network with people, you find a job, connect with recruiters, which is fine. But even my personal resume that I sent to recruiters, I just put the name of the city and the state. I put an email that I use for job applications, not even my personal email. I put a phone number that I use for job applications that if you call the phone number, it's going to ring right here on my phone, but it's not my personal phone number. So again, you mentioned voice over IP, VoIP numbers. That is, there's so many apps that people can download to kind of have like a second phone number on their phone. It's going to ring on your phone. You don't need to even buy a separate phone line or a separate SIM card. So, and you can use it for anything. If you want to sign up with all these stores and get benefits, you can have a separate phone number on your main phone to handle all of that for you. So it's just something to keep in mind, pay attention to. I believe I've mentioned this to you before. My WhatsApp is a different phone number. My WhatsApp is on my phone. It's the app is literally on my main phone.
Nice.
But it's not my main phone number. My main phone number is my main phone number. My WhatsApp number is my WhatsApp number. There are a few other numbers on my phone. So sometimes
how many numbers do you have? Do you keep track of this? I imagine you waking up in the morning, opening an Excel spreadsheet with all these different phone numbers.
So actually, at this point, I used to be able to keep track of the numbers, because another thing with the apps is, so one of those apps is called Burner, Burner. So you can sign up different phone numbers, different area codes on that app. And it actually keeps them separate, different color codes, different, of course, profiles. You open, click on a phone number. You can name it any way you want. So I name these different numbers depending on what investigations I'm working on. Some of them are for stores. Like Target has a profile. The name of the number, I literally saved it as Target. So if I get anything on that, I know it's related to Target. If I start getting funny emails, then maybe Target needs to check their database because I'm getting non-Target stuff. So anyway, these apps can do a good job of keeping these things in track. I stopped paying attention because sometimes I open a number for like 2 days and then I shut it down. That's it.
Okay.
The number has done its job. It's time to move on. So imagine if I keep having different phones, physical phones, I'm going to be like a drug dealer with like 20 different flip phones. No, that's too cumbersome. Mm-hmm. So these apps do a good job of keeping track and all those fun stuff. So do you have any similar apps you use or?
I was going to ask you a question. Can you access all of your phone numbers at the same time? Or do you have to switch to a specific profile? Let's say this is my work profile and I can only see what happens on that work number now, unless I switch to my Target profile or.
So for this particular app, Burner, I don't have to switch per se. The only thing is if I'm on a call on one of those numbers, that another call cannot come in. Mm-hmm. If a call comes in on my main phone number, that takes priority. But when I'm in the app and I'm on either receiving or making a call using one profile, any call that comes in, I'm going to see it as a missed call. Mm-hmm. And of course, messages can still come in anytime. So it basically functions like you are on a call and another call comes in, it says the number is busy. But then I'll see the missed call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Perfect. Do you have voicemails as well?
Yes. Actually, take time to set up the voicemails, yeah.
That's most
of the things I do don't require calls. It's usually text messages, most like 99% of the time. So, yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, so to back kind to of your question.
Hint at some of this, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say to hint at some of these investigations that some people are probably wondering, what kind of investigations require you just having a bunch of numbers and you don't actually make calls, but you receive calls. Sometimes the phone numbers are to receive the two-factor authentication code to log into a different website or a different platform. Or if we're talking about crypto investigations, maybe I have to set up a bank account and then I have to, of course, do all the two-factor authentication for the online banking for that online bank account. Then I quickly create a profile on the Burner app. I name it whatever the name of that bank or crypto platform is to get the two-factor code, the six-digit code. I put it into the website. That's the end of that phone number.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need it anymore. It's done. Because I can't use my main phone number for that. That's not going to happen. That's not possible.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend it.
So usually to maybe trace some financial transactions or quickly run some investigations, follow up some trail. Because, I mean, in our line of work, most investigations are not linear. It doesn't just start from A to Z. Sometimes you start from A, you end up in like E, F, G, H, and then you go back to A1.
Mm-hmm. And B and then
A1, A2, A3, and then B, C, D, E, and then you go back to C2.
Correct, yeah.
So, yeah, a crypto investigation can lead to a social media profile, and then the social media profile leads you to an art gallery somewhere in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And then that leads you to a, an influencer's Instagram account, and then that leads you to some mom and pop shop in a foreign country. So yeah, so at every point in time, you need different email addresses, different phone numbers, different crypto platforms. If you're dealing with cryptocurrency investigations, you would need to maybe create a LinkedIn account that is not for a real person.
Of course.
Or you create a recruiter's LinkedIn account to be able to track down people opening up fake LinkedIn accounts so that they can send emails as if they work in a certain company.
Yeah, because one peculiar thing with LinkedIn is that you can see who saw, who looked at your profile, right? Sometimes you don't pay for the premium, sometimes you either have access to a temporary premium account or you find ways and you figure it out based on like the blurry images that they show you. So in that sense, LinkedIn is very special because you can see who looked at your at your LinkedIn. So I never use, of course, my personal LinkedIn for any type of investigations. I do have a secondary one with a job that it's just the type of job that you would just go and look at people's profiles. So it shouldn't raise a red flag for anybody that I'm looking at.
Exactly. So there's so many cases like that, especially in the recent, in the last 2 to 3 years, when these bad guys started using LinkedIn for this particular purpose. So they just use AI to get a bunch of AI pictures, open accounts. And the common thing with this account is they would use a major organization that you cannot necessarily track who works there. So big organization, like Google, for example. And I say Google because this actually happens. Google knows that this happens. People go on LinkedIn, they claim to work for Google. How can you verify that someone works for Google? Google is too big. Even major grocery stores. How many people do you know works at McDonald's? It could be the franchise. There's tons of McDonald's franchises. Someone says server at McDonald's in Philadelphia. There are 2 million people who work as servers. Exactly.
And it's only temporary jobs in the most case. So you don't expect someone to keep that job for a long time. So if the if the LinkedIn account disappears, then it's not really suspicious.
Let's talk about some of this. You mentioned Amber Alerts earlier. As some people know, these are things I actually work on just to be able to help because I have the skills to do it either way. Chances are working on missing people's cases, domestic abuse, domestic violence, and these Amber Alerts are kind of like the same types of investigations. Sometimes an Amber Alert is a result of a domestic violence case, or is the result of a domestic abuse case. So for people who are not familiar with the Amber Alert, it's basically, I believe, in the U.S. only,
where
a child goes missing. So a child goes missing, the relatives of the child file, they went go to the police, and then the police say they file an Amber Alert to look for the child. I believe the origin is from a case involving a child named Amber. I have to look it up again. But basically, I work on Amber Alert cases most of the time, depending on my schedule, as my schedule permits. And all the Amber Alert is basically looking up open source information to figure out the person that kidnapped this child or these children, where could they be? Where could they be headed to? Because 99% of the time, they are headed to a relative's house. Because people in that kind of scenario, they really don't have much resources to go underground, literally go underground. They don't have resources to not use their credit card. They don't have enough cash on hand, and so on. So that's what leads to using open source intel to look for who are their coworkers, who are their close friends and family members, the name of the type of car they are driving, the plate number, the license plate of the car they are driving. Is it their personal car? Is it a rental car? And on and on and on. So from your experience, how would you say you approach Amber Alert using all these open source techniques you've been talking about?
Yeah, a very good question. Actually, I wanted to add something on because in my past life, I used to be a 911 dispatcher. And Amber Alerts are only issued for kids or children in general that are assumed to be in danger, in immediate danger. It's not my kid was riding a bike and now I can't find him. That's not going to qualify for an Amber Alert. There has to be credible reason to believe that this child is in danger. So we actually last week saw one here in Florida where a child, an 8-month-old, was kidnapped. But it's usually by one of the parents. They usually, like you mentioned, lose custody or something happens in the family that triggers that kidnapping and then the subsequent Amber Alert. So in that case, it's not something to take lightly. There's a child's life that's in danger that law enforcement determined that is in danger. And in many cases, I don't know if you have, but I've seen so many memes on social media. Like, what am I expected to do when I see one of these Amber Alerts? Because usually all of our phones get that notification. It's very loud.
Yeah.
They usually share whatever information they have on the child or the kidnapper, being the parent or someone else that took them, or a vehicle that someone witnessed being in the scene of the abduction. So in that sense, again, I like to empower the citizenship. If we do it, you can do it as well. What is it that you can do? Maybe you can't go out and try to locate this child, but you can use open source intelligence to try and grab a little bit of information that maybe in the heat of the moment, the police station that's handling the case doesn't have the personnel, or maybe they don't really know where to start. And for anyone that's trying to start performing OSINT, then those cases would be perfect. Or those notifications that you get from your local police department. Hey, this person was involved in a hit and run. Like, I get those all the time, actually, even on social media. So how I usually start, it all depends on what I think the motive of the person is. In this case, it was a mom kidnapped her own child, and she had lost custody just recently of the child. So obviously she didn't want to part with a baby. So I would try to locate, actually I found, the first thing I found was her LinkedIn account. And she unfortunately didn't share a lot of information, but at least we could see a couple companies that she used to work for and the one that she currently claimed to work for. So that would be a good way to start finding maybe coworkers. Maybe if she's seeing someone from work that could help her, aid her. At the end of the day, she is just a mom trying to take care of her child. She could play that that kind of story on someone that really cares for her. So I would try to find that from LinkedIn. If I find any social media accounts on her, being Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, just any kind of social media, I would like to find who comments and likes on most of her pictures. Because usually, you know, it's the family members. It's the moms, the dads, the sisters, the boyfriends. So based on those people that like and comment on those posts, if I'm lucky enough to find her social media and it's still active, then I would go and look at that family member's social media and see if they post maybe a picture of the front of a house or a school. Mm. Or a well-known park that I can use with maybe a reverse image search to try and locate that specific area where it's at. And just grab as much information as one can on the relatives and maybe on the friends as well. If someone like comments on all of her stuff, then for sure that would be another person of interest. Because she could be taking the baby or the child to their house. And like you mentioned, this is someone that's making a desperate attempt to take the child. You don't know what state of mind that person might be. They're probably not using their credit cards, so they probably also need money from family and friends again. So in those types of cases, I think finding family and friends would be vital. And of course, if the, like you mentioned, if there's a vehicle, try to find the tag on the vehicle. If someone saw that vehicle, the address, if that tag is registered to the person itself or is someone that knows them, where is that vehicle registered? I believe that, of course, for law enforcement, it would be way easier just to run that tag and see where that vehicle is registered to. But in some cases, the subject or the person of interest might switch vehicles depending on if they have access to a different vehicle. That would be the first thing that they do. And for better or for worse, here in Florida, public transportation is not the best. So you can't really rely on that. So for sure, you will need a vehicle, at least in this area. So that's how I would start. How would you do it?
I would basically take the same approach you did. Reverse image searches. People think OSINT is just using Google. A lot of OSINT is actually being creative. So you find one piece of information and then you take that piece of information, you leverage it on top of another search website. So basically you're using searches in unique ways. For example, people just type on Google to search. No, there are so many ways you can use quotation marks. You can use tildes. You can use asterisks. You can use hyphens on Google to give you what you want. You can search specifically on Google to give you results that are just PDF files or JPEG files, or plug an image on Google Images to do a reverse search. Or
Tinder. I prefer Yandex, but if you like Google, it's fine.
yep. Or even DuckDuckGo, and then you tell it to give you results from a specific country or region only. So all of that is some examples of how I would approach it. And a case from last year, actually, it was a missing persons case. A tourist, she lived in Indiana. She traveled to Puerto Rico for vacation. I believe I sent my report on that case to you. So unfortunately, she was killed while on vacation and took like the Puerto Rican police, and I think the FBI got involved at some point, and people were just trying to figure out. She was missing for a while before she was eventually found to have been killed. And for that brief period, I think it was a week when she was missing, and people were trying to figure out where could she have gone. She left her phone. She left all her stuff in the Airbnb she was renting. And that got my attention. And I was just doing some search, and it got me to the point where, like I said, being creative. And I figured out, okay, what's unique to that area where she was renting the Airbnb? There was this national forest, El Yunque National Forest in Puerto Rico. It's kind of like a major tourist attraction. Something else is that part of the national forest is known for rituals. Of course, rituals ordinarily, I mean, rituals happen everywhere. Almost every country has some elements of ritual and so on. However, the dates of that vacation, which also brought this creativity that I was mentioning, I had to go to. So from my background, I'm from Nigeria. I have some knowledge about some traditional religions and the rituals and the role of the full moon in some of these rituals. And I was thinking, what was the phase of the moon during the date this woman was reported missing? So I went on Google, and then I went to timeanddate.com and a few other websites that would tell you, was it a full moon? Was it a half moon on this particular date? So I plugged in those dates and I realized it was actually a full moon the day before she got missing. And then I was thinking, maybe this is something, maybe not. I put some right reports together, sent it down to the police in Puerto Rico handling the case. maybe it helped, I don't know, because I never got a response, but that was an element of that investigation to consider. It's possible she was at the wrong place at the wrong time and she saw something she shouldn't have seen. I don't know. I'm not going to speak ill of the dead in whatever way, but all I'm saying is these investigations could go in so many different ways. And because of that singular fact, it's important to think of so many different things. Who would have thought a full moon would have something to do with a missing person's case? Like I said, up until today, I don't know if that had anything to do with anything. She might have been robbed.
So the case was not solved?
So she was found in a river. I think she drowned. But how did she get into the river? Nobody knows. I have to go look up that case again and see if there is an update or something. Maybe what I sent was used. Maybe it had nothing to do with the case. I don't know. But I found something, right? That national forest is known for certain things. And from my background about rituals and traditional religions, the full moon, just like in every other country, the full moon is significant, it's symbolic, and so on. Maybe there is a connection, or maybe there is no connection. So all of this to say that there is all kinds of things that can be creatively used when conducting an OSINT investigation.
Absolutely.
So you can't rule anything out. Just like we watch on TV, the detectives trying to solve a crime, the first rule of detectivism, if that is a thing, you cannot rule anything out. So,
yeah. Everything was that simple, right? But yeah, more power to the person that's performing the investigation, because at the end of the day, what we are presenting here is just the tools. But at the end of the day, it's you as the person that does OSINT, whether you are an investigator or you're just someone that's interested in getting into that, or you're an analyst, at the end of the day, that's you hold the power to use all those different tools to find information that you're looking for.
At the expense of time, I don't want to keep you up late because it's quite late where we are. What would you say is an advice to give to people who are trying to get into open source intelligence, who see the interest, who think it's interesting and they want to be like 007? What would you advise them on how to start resources and all of that fun stuff?
Absolutely. So my first recommendation would be, do not get certified. Do not enroll in any courses that advertise OSINT just yet. First, figure out if this is something that you enjoy doing. There's tons of resources online. There's tons of databases that you can access for free. Most of the things that I learned about OSINT, and I believe it's the same case for you, I learned just Googling things, going on YouTube, watching videos, figuring it out on my own, basically. So if you do that for a little bit, what I would recommend if you're interested in doing investigations, just follow your local police department. The chances are is that they're going to post something and they're going to ask the citizenship to help them out about a hit and run, or they're looking for someone that might be involved in some sort of crime. So follow your local police department and see what you can find, or see if you can help at least a little bit to locate the people that they are looking for. Of course, do not put yourself in danger. I'm not recommending that you go out there and start shooting people or anything like that. But there's so many resources that you can access just online. So every recommendation that I'm giving here is just for online resources. And if you do that for a little bit and you decide, yes, this is what I want to do. Because, you know, some people are not ready, or they don't really like being involved in certain types of things. Or maybe you only want to do, let's say, financial crimes. Or maybe you're interested in like dark web investigations and that's your thing. And you're not really interested in like homicides, for example. It's not for everybody. Perfect. Then just go and specialize in that. and start building your toolkit. And after a while, yes, I would recommend that you either get a certification, take some sort of course. There are a lot of organizations that ask for volunteers to go and help out. I believe Trace Labs is one of them. Their main goal is to find missing people. So join Trace Labs, see if you can do CTFs, capture the flags. They usually gamify the process of performing OSINT investigations. So just to make it a little bit more fun. So it's not so dire and you're just involved in like bad stuff all day and every day.
Right.
So that would be my recommendation. What would you say?
Yeah. Similar to what you said, I would say just explore on your own first. Try to do some basic searches on your own friends and family members, people you know what you hope to find, and just see the different ways you can find something about them. If it's an older relative, that means they have a lot more things online that you can find. Maybe your parents or your uncle or auntie is in their 60s. Maybe see if you can find their high school online. That means you know their high school, but just search for it online. Start with their name. Start with their where they met their spouse. Just do some exploring on your own. Your friends that you went to school, see if you can find their elementary school online. Meaning you know the answer, but you're trying to look for it online. And then from there, that will give you confidence, because chances are that website that gave you that information that you know is correct, you would bookmark that website. You would keep going back to that website, because now you know that this website is legitimate. It actually told me where my uncle went to elementary school, and I know this for a fact because I know the answer already. So if you can find where your first house, where you first lived in a different state, and then you can find that information online, even better. So all of that would build your interest, because nothing is as discouraging as trying to find information online and you don't find the answer. You just close the website, you close your computer, and that's so discouraging. But again, start with something you know the answer to, and then go from there. So that would build that interest. And it's a time intensive, just like anything else. You cannot become a doctor in 1 year. Mm-hmm. You cannot become an architect in 1 month. So with everything else, it's literally a career. It takes time. So just like people go to school to become whatever they become, you must be willing to invest in time and effort. And like you said, before you even start spending money, you have to spend time to get you to that place where you're now comfortable to spend money on some certifications, on some cool tool, and so on and so forth. So that's basically, yeah.
And also be aware that OSINT and just cyber in general is a field that always changes. So what I learned 2 years ago might not be ready or available today. So if you like to learn certain things and just keep using it for years and years, that's not going to be OSINT. You always have to be learning. Like, you never stop learning, basically, because when you think you know something, then comes AI or the new crypto or the new thing, and now you have to learn this whole new thing again. So
Just last week, me and you were still exchanging some websites and some places to look for something. And it's different. And because of time, we couldn't even get into AI. So maybe that would be another episode.
For the next episode.
There's so much to talk about with AI and OSINT, and how AI is messing up OSINT, and how OSINT is messing up AI, which is a totally different episode entirely. So
absolutely like they say, AI is not gonna get your job, it's the person that knows how
people
to use
that know how
AI
to use AI
that are gonna take your job. So learn how to use AI, everybody.
Is there anything else you'd want to mention before we wrap up here?
Just thank you so much again for this opportunity. Second time, loved it as much as the first time, and it's, I'm really happy to see you again.
You're welcome. Anytime. So of course, there's just so many things to talk about, and you're welcome anytime. Like you just did last week, just let me know the date, and then we'll set it up, we'll jump on the call, and we'll record. So
absolutely. You got it.
So, thanks once again. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, babe. Bye-bye.